Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the sixth season of Legends of Tomorrow. This was a 15-episode season.
All their seasons have been short.
I was going to say, it's pretty standard for them to do 15. I think they may have done one or two that were maybe 18.
They're six seasons in and don't have 100 episodes yet. The 100th episode is in season 7.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just normally the 100th episode is in, like, season 5.
Yeah, because normally most shows do 20 to 22 episodes a season. They get to it a lot faster. So they're not that far behind.
No, but it's just something that dawned on me as we were watching.
I wonder if they're doing shorter seasons of the show because they tend to have a bit of a bigger cast than some of the other CW shows tend to have.
I wonder if it's a little that. And also, they've been known to just toss it in for the summer season. Uses a mid-season replacement. It's really been kind of their, we want to have superheroes on for you year-round
Their off-season show.
Yeah.
And also, they tend to do more period piece type things. So costuming, location, extras. I think there's a little bit more to do on this show.
I think the budgeting for the show has got to be fascinating. Because they're
budgeting, logistics, absolutely.
They're doing the effects.
Yeah.
As well as trying to find the locations that look like the 1920s, the 1800s, that look like other planets.
Yeah. Well, and this season did not only the time traveling they typically do, but also spent quite a bit of time in space.
Yeah.
And a few episodes that were all just either on the ship or in Constantine's house.
I was going to say, we went to Constantine's house a lot more, and I wondered if part of that was, you know what, we've built up a set we like, we're comfortable in. That I don't want to say we know how it operates, but it's kind of a, we know where the living room is, we know where the dining room is. We've kind of got this geography down.
Well, and it's a different setting than the Wave Rider that they've been in most of the time. So just the novelty of it, I think, was some of it.
Well, and I think it hit novelty points in every respect. It was very Victorian. It was very unique.
Well, they did one episode that was kind of their riff on Clue.
Yes.
They also did one where they did part of it animated.
That was priceless.
So, I mean, they've definitely done some things on this show where you just wouldn't get it on any of the other CW shows. This is very much the anything can and will happen show, which I respect. Sometimes I like, sometimes not so much.
Well, this season we got trapped in a bowling alley in space.
Yes.
And, I mean, there were aspects of that one that I sat there going, wait a sec, I'm not sure I understand. Wait a sec, explain this to me.
There were a couple that's like, wait, that's where they're going with this?
But once I began to understand what they were doing with the bowling alley in space, I'm like, okay, there are aspects of this that actually kind of make sense to me.
For me, this is a show that it's not one that I try to understand, but you just have to accept.
I try to understand its inherent logic. So, like, with the bowling alley one, okay, Earth has become a bowling ball, but where the fingers were going in the bowling ball wasn't quite working for me.
Well, there were aspects of it where sometimes the people on Earth felt the movement, sometimes they didn't, and again, it's got its own, I almost can't say internal logic. It's got its sensibility, its rules or what have you. But there are times they flat out defy logic.
Yeah. But they have fun.
Yeah. Well, and it allows them to do stuff that would be harder on Supergirl or Flash and flat out impossible, say, on Arrow when that was on.
Yeah.
Which is funny because, again, a lot of these characters came directly out of Flash and Arrow. And at the end, they seem to be writing out Heatwave, Rory.
Yeah.
Although he might show up in the first episode of the next season, who knows?
The way they did it, let's back up and let's talk about Kayla.
Okay.
In terms of the alien that he ends up in this strange relationship with out of part necessity, part everything else. But what I loved about Kayla, as we were getting to know her, is how much she was like the character he'd written in the romance novels a few seasons ago.
Well, and it's funny because while there is that similarity, I don't know that any of the other legends actually mention that.
They don't. But in so many ways, she's perfect for him.
But I guess for me, that's one of them where they're both playing on what they've done before and not playing on what they've done before. And it just seemed like a few of them should have had the, doesn't she remind you of, yeah, let's not talk about it. You know, even if it had just been that.
Or even if it was just, you know, hey, this is literally Rory's dream girl.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but then at one point it's like, okay, we're done with her. And I'm like, no!
She was very much brought up at one point, cast to the side, and then brought back.
I'm like, well, good, because they were the perfect characters together. But then to just now say, okay, they're going to go have some time to be just the two of them.
I could never tell if they had planned for that or if it was just kind of how it worked out.
The way that scene on the front porch was playing out was kind of a, okay, you two go off and do your thing. You know you're always welcome back with us anytime. You always have a home with us.
But weren't they there at the very last scene?
They were not in the walking scene at the end.
Okay, I was thinking they might have been.
No.
There's enough characters on the show, it's easy to lose count.
But that also had me wondering, how did they leave the farmhouse? Her ship had been stolen.
But they also had the time portals still.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Because that's how they recruited the one guy to help out. Yeah, this was another season where they ended on a moment that they have to address next season.
Yeah.
But they've been doing that ever since really the end of the first season when Nate first showed up.
Yeah.
So, and that's one that I'd kind of like to see them reference back to a little bit, given Stargirl now exists, and how does that Stargirl play with the one that he had been with in on the team of JSA and stuff?
Yeah.
So, and you could argue Crisis, et cetera, but whatever. Because I'm not sure we got the implication at that point is it was all the one Earth. But, and I'm curious, I mean, they messed up time, they messed up magic, they've, you know, gotten, you know, Sarah kidnapped into space and a few things like that, where every season was building on the mistake of the last. And I'm curious, other than being presumably stranded in, what, 1925?
They're in 1925 right now, yeah.
Other than being stranded there, what's the direction of the next season?
I've seen a one-liner for what the direction of next season is. And it's not, we're stranded in 1925.
Okay.
It's, we're stranded in the 1800s. So we have to time travel out of 1925.
Oh, wow.
To get stranded elsewhere. In another country, I believe.
I know who one of the new characters is going to be, and I know of a couple of guest stars we're going to get. But overall, because it was a short turnaround time between this season ending and the next going.
Yeah.
But that's, again, this is the show that also had gotten everything done before the pandemic, had a bit of a wait between seasons, and now they're just kind of catching up to it.
Well, they had the panel at San Diego's Comic-Con at Home,
mm-hmm.
which is when they tossed out the 1800s comment.
Mm.
And I was like, well, on the one hand, that's interesting. And I can see from a production standpoint, let's go stay put for a little while.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's have, going back to Constantine's house, kind of a, let's have a location instead of constantly having to search for locations. Let's have a set of wardrobe.
Well, it's also kind of like what they had done with Doctor Who at one point in the original run, where it's like, okay, we've done enough with the TARDIS and stuff. Let's strand him on Earth without it for a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it was within this season, didn't we have Astrid, where, okay, now she's on the Wave Rider, but she gets, I guess, left at Constantine's house.
Yep.
And she's having to learn how to live without magic and not in hell. And it's like, what happens to clothing when it's dirty? Nobody mm-hmm. tarred to do laundry.
They covered quite a bit of ground because in addition to rescuing Sarah in space, there was Astrid and Constantine, you know, having to adapt to their new status quos.
Mm-hmm.
Him having lost his magic, trying to get it back, her being out of hell, living on Earth. And then again, the whole romance stuff with Zari and John stuff.
Well, and played just right off of Zari and the Totem.
Yeah.
With Nick.
Well, and I think they used a little bit of a get-out-of-jail-free card in terms of splitting the Totem into two.
Yes.
The way they did it was at least humorous. And I was almost thinking at the end they could have used that as an excuse to swap Zaris again.
Mm.
So I'm curious if we're going to get a little bit of a mix-up in the crew for next season, because they've done that quite a bit. I mean, we're down to Sarah being really the only original one left.
Yeah.
You know, with Rory leaving.
And I like Rory.
I think the way that went down is they figured they needed to either cut costs or something like that, and he'd been there long enough that rather than negotiate, they'll just cut him.
Yeah, which is a shame.
And arguably a mistake, but they'd done quite a bit with the character, so maybe they had nowhere left to go.
But with all the stuff they did in the season, I totally disagree. In terms of setting up more of the fatherhood, but also the grandfatherhood, and really, Rory has come the furthest
mm-hmm.
as a character.
Well, come the furthest, but also gone all over the place.
Yes, I'll agree with that.
Because we've got the whole fatherhood stuff with the alien kids, the stuff last season of fatherhood with the actual daughter, including going back and becoming part of her life throughout. There was also the whole writing bit.
Yes.
The then, after that, the handing off the writing to Mona or whoever. Yes. And then first season.
He was the assassin or whatever.
Getting thrown off the ship and becoming the assassin.
Yeah. But really, when you consider he started as a villain,
mm-hmm.
he has struggled to find himself throughout the series.
Yeah.
Because being the good guy doesn't come naturally to him.
No, it does not.
And by the end of this season, in so many ways, he's found himself. He's no longer the give me something to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
If you won't give me something to shoot, I'll shoot one of you.
He's definitely changed the most. And I do think he's grown. I just don't think it was a straight line from there to here.
Oh, it certainly wasn't a straight line, but it was an interesting line.
Yeah, and he did a great job with it.
You know, but I think that's part of why I want to see more with the character. Is to see how he figures out, or if he can figure out, being the good guy and being a grandfather.
I really hope whenever this show ends, they find some way to really acknowledge him and all the other characters that have been on the ship.
Yeah.
And at one point, they had little icons they were using and stuff, but that kind of fell by the wayside a few seasons back.
That's right. They would kind of spin the logos to make the letters of legends. I'd forgotten that.
And we've had, you know, the Hawks, Firestorm, Kid Flash for a while, you know, Vixen, a bunch of other characters literally come and go, Adam and stuff, that I'd love to see, again, whenever that kind of grand finale is,
mm-hmm.
that they've got some way of, you know, tying that all in and acknowledging that.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely an ensemble show, and they've rotated in and out most of the characters.
Well, and I'd say almost every character has had their status quo changed quite a bit. I mean, Ava started out
mm-hmm.
as the director who was basically chasing them.
Yeah, yeah.
As now co-captain.
I'm trying to think of any character that's not undergone a radical change of some sort.
Really, Sarah Lance is the least changed.
Yeah, but it was more of a coming into her own kind of a story.
True.
And you could argue what happened to her this season, fairly radical physical change.
Well, yeah, but
which is actually giving her effective kind of healing and immortality or whatever, kind of interesting for an assassin and whatnot. It really makes her arguably one of the more powerful people on the ship.
Yeah.
Certainly the least defeatable. But she'd also had a very long and storied history prior to the show, having died, come back, etc. And I think they've leveraged that fairly well here.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, her history with Constantine from Arrow and stuff led to that character getting onto the show. And again, that was something that one appearance on Arrow was supposed to be just a one-time special appearance thing. Yet it worked, and they were able to get the character back for 2-3 seasons now.
Yeah. I'm amazed how much time he's spent on Legends.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I imagine part of it is it's a fun character. He does a good job with it. But I've also got to think, they like working with him.
Yes.
Because what's unique about this show is we've had a couple of people play multiple characters on the show.
Yeah.
You know, two Zaris. We had the actress who played Vixen become Charlie.
Yeah.
You know, so I think when they find somebody they like, sure, we may write the character out, but let's hang on to the person.
Mm-hmm.
And I respect that.
Well, but talking about totally unexpected changes, I think Gary kind of came out of left field at me this season.
He's another one where the character does what the plot needs, be it studying magic, being an alien, or what have you.
Yeah.
Some of these characters are literally all over the board based on whatever they think is, you know, the direction they want to go this season.
I think the tried and true fact of Gary is he's loyal to Ava and thus to Sarah.
Yeah. I just think the way he's definitely the comedic relief character.
Yeah.
And the almost plot device character. We need something we could be doing with Constantine. Let's give him an apprentice. That gives us a few get out of jail free cards. Oh, we're going to be dealing in space. So let's pull Gary in for that. Because sure, why not?
Yeah.
And some of what they did there made some of what had happened before make no sense.
Yeah.
And if they'd played it off of, hey, this is a change because of crisis or something, that could have been funny.
That would have been wild.
So it's one where the sensibility of the show sometimes works for me, sometimes just does not. But they can also go in such wild directions, be it the let's do a board game that you're trapped in kind of an episode, or the animated stuff, or was it the last season or two they did a couple of musical numbers or whatever, a Bollywood number that was just hilarious to watch. I mean, it was a lot of fun.
Well, and we basically got trapped in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood for a while.
Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, they have had a few where it's like flipping channels on TV. They did the sitcom episode this time. And they've done some stuff that is just very creative, very interesting, very risky.
Yeah.
Sometimes it lands, sometimes it doesn't for me. But it would be, really, if they wanted to bring Stephen Amell back, having him either as a younger version of his Arrow character or as a different character, whatever, for an episode with the, oh, he's going to be a regular. He goes through one of their crazy days. It's like, nope, I'm out.
Yeah.
Can't do this. Uh-uh. You know, kind of a thing. Because it's so against the sensibility of his show, his character.
Yeah.
And just, I can't handle this. You know, kind of a thing. Would be hilarious.
Yeah, it would.
So, don't know that they'll ever do that. They've had him as a guest star a time or two when they do crossovers or when they go to the future Star City and such. But there's so many other DC characters they, I feel, could and should bring into this that to be bringing in Spooner, that's a new character, like brand new creation, Ava, Gary, I just, it feels like they've got so much untapped potential out of the DC universe.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they've got to be beholden to only characters from the comics or whatever, but if you're saying these are legendary comic book characters and then you're, you know, filling half the ship with, you know, your own creations.
Well, and we've stopped going to Star City. I mean, we used to kind of check in with Star City once a season, even if it wasn't present day.
Yeah, either to find out what's happening with the Lance family or to go to the future version to figure out what's going there.
Yeah.
And they absolutely had the potential of doing that to finish off the unresolved plotline with Mia.
You know, it would be entertaining to me if I were designing a show like this to basically whether, I don't know how you'd time it out, but maybe like at the beginning, the middle, and the end of each season, pop into, go to Star City once, go to National City once, that kind of thing. But do it such that you have sort of one place you're checking in on, and like go to CC Jers.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're walking out the door, the storefronts across the street are changing each time, even though it's not a different time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Because those subtle changes are being made by the legends.
Well, they had one time that they were doing a trivia contest.
Yes.
That they lost because of the changes they had made.
Yes.
Which I thought was funny.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be fun if they really wanted to get coffee at Jitters or whatever, and they were always timing it. It's like, okay, this is the one day nothing insane is going on in town. Flash is off at a crossover, or this is happening, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
here's where we can kind of sneak in, you know, get some food, you know, hit Big Billy Burger or whatever. And
Yeah.
The other thing that I would have been tempted to do, particularly if you knew how many seasons you were going to get, which obviously they wouldn't.
Yeah.
Would be to do that kind of go back to a place every season, but tell part of the story backwards.
Oh, yeah.
I always wanted to figure out, how did he get that? Well, let's go back and find out. Well, wait, how did that happen? Go back and then have to circle back to the other end of it to, hang on. This is how it all plays out.
Yeah.
You know, there's some stuff they could do that'd be fun. And with their anything can go sensibility, I think they could get away with some, I don't say more intricate time travel shenanigans than other shows, but be given a little more leeway than you might get on some other shows.
Yeah, I totally agree. They definitely bend rules other shows can't bend.
Mm-hmm.
They've baked that into how their show operates.
Oh, and it's funny because it didn't start that way. It started with, okay, everybody strap into the seats. We're going to go, you know, bounce around literally through time, land somewhere, and go deal with something.
Yeah.
But then it got progressively crazier and crazier and crazier.
Which makes me wonder what changes have happened behind the scenes. I.e., did showrunner changes happen, or did sort of the person in charge of the writing department change?
I've got to imagine head writer, showrunner, and some of it may have also been just as you're swapping out some of the cast.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting to kind of go back and try to figure out at what point did they shift from the more standard sensible storytelling to some of the craziness we get now.
Yeah.
And try to figure out, okay, what was the turning point and potentially why was the turning point? Because they're doing some fun stuff, but there are definitely some times where it's like, if we've got to choose, do we watch back when Arrow was on or Flash or Supergirl or Stargirl or Black Lightning or, you know, what have you, Batwoman and such, this isn't always the top of my list. Often it's not.
I like laying these pile up and benching them. I like diving into these characters and staying with them.
I think it works better as a binge show because it can be a little jarring to go from this back to, you know, Flash or Batwoman, something that's got a very different sensibility to it.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the various shows, I would say Batwoman and Arrow are kind of very much on the standard street level superheroics for the most part. You then get to Black Lightning, Flash, and Supergirl, where you've got the superpowers, you've got a little more that can happen, but still, the plot lines are fairly standard, the sensibility is fairly standard. And then you've got this, where we're going to go fight a giant stuffed animal-looking thing.
That one came to mind for me, too.
You know? Well, and they had one season where they were going after all the totems and stuff, and then that kind of, other than the one totem, went away.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to go back through and see what kind of literal artifacts or whatever are established in this show that could have been used either by later characters or villains or something.
Mm-hmm.
That just kind of got dropped by the wayside. Not to say they got to keep harping on what they've done before, but...
But it'd be interesting if somebody did kind of a behind-the-scenes thing and went into what used to be Rip's office.
Mm-hmm.
And the room I think of as the library. But did kind of a, have you ever noticed this prop from this episode is now on this bookshelf? And that kind of thing.
Well, it's interesting because I remember early on in the show, particularly when they were in the captain's kind of quarters on the main deck behind where the...
Yeah, Rip's office, basically.
Yeah, which is not the library because there's the other... Anyways, there was what looked like Dr. Fate's helmet or the Golden Age Red Tornado's helmet or a few other things like that that were Easter eggs and stuff. But we spend both so little time in that room and the nature of the time is different.
Yeah.
Both on how where the characters are, how they're acting, that we don't really have the, okay, here's a wide shot and I can really see all that stuff.
The stuff in the background there now feels purely like background. Whereas it used to feel like at the end of an episode, Rip would set something down and you would see it kind of being added to the collection.
Yeah, it felt more Easter egg-ish before. Yeah. That's something that I don't know if that was a change just on the writing side or on the prop department side or what, but that's a more subtle change to the show.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I've got to recognize everything in the background, but it was kind of cool when I could recognize some stuff.
Well, and it was just cool to recognize, oh, wow, that's from a few episodes ago, and it's still there.
Yeah. Well, early in this show's tenure, there were times I would pause and say, okay, let's go back. Did you catch that?
Yeah.
You know, like, what the hell is that? And I'd explain, you know. You as a non-comic reader didn't phase at all. Me is, oh, wow, that's cool. So, and given that they've had 6 seasons now, they've had time to build up their own mythology and be putting, like you said, some stuff in the background or whatnot.
Yeah.
So it's a fun show, but I think it's much more of an acquired taste than a lot of the others. And I think a lot of people wrote it off initially as it's just the cast-offs from the other shows.
Well, and I think anyone who didn't enjoy the early seasons should give it another chance because it's so different than it was then.
Mm-hmm. I think sampling the first episode of the different seasons to see if one of them is a little more to your liking or something.
Because mm-hmm.
Maybe you want to follow the here's the magical stuff, or here's where we're fixing up mistakes in time, or, you know, we're dealing with aliens now, or what have you.
Or random people have traveled through time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Napoleon in the wrong era, dinosaurs in the wrong place, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. But this is it seems like the first time they've ended on a note where since the first season, they're not having to clean up their own mistake.
Yeah.
But given how it ended, they may be.
Yeah, we have no idea who made the mistake. We didn't actively see ourselves make it. I'll put it that way.
I'm thinking the flyby at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Was potentially the villain they just defeated.
Oh, that guy sucks.
Time travel show, you've got potential.
Yeah, I couldn't tell which ship it was.
It's also possible it was the Wave Rider from the future that they had to do that.
Yeah.
I hope we don't have to wait all of 7th season to go find that out either.
Yeah, see, I couldn't tell if it was the Wave Rider or if it was Kayla's ship.
Yeah, I wasn't sure.
It was a fast flyby, in other words.
It could have been a third ship also. It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
And this is a show where, again, anything can go, so who knows? So it's like I said, a fun show, but not necessarily for everybody.
I agree.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.